Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's June 19th. We are in Treyasar and Amos with Perek Ches, Chapter 8. Kohirani Hashem Elokim Vine Kluv Koyetz. So Hashem Elokim showed me. Behold, there was a Kluv Koyetz. A Kluv Koyetz means a container of figs that were not good figs. It was a basket filled with figs that were not tasty, that were not ripe, that are inferior figs. Vayomer, and he said, Hashem said to me, Mo'ata ro'eh Amos, what do you see, Amos? Va'omar kluv koyetz. I saw a basket of these inferior figs. Va'omar Hashem Eli, Hashem said to me, Ba haketz elami Yisrael, the time, the end has come for my nation Israel. Lo osif od avar lo, I will no longer pass over for him, which means I won't overlook anymore. I am now going to act upon their behavior. So how does a basket of inferior figs show that Hashem is not going to wait any longer?
Not going to be sweet.
It's true. But how, that just shows things are going to not be good. But it doesn't show Hashem's not going to wait any longer. What's that?
It's one of the
Shiva Aminim. It's true.
So,
we lose Eretz
Yisrael.
Okay. So it seems to indicate Eretz Yisrael. Is there something in your footnote?
Yeah. Well, I have the book all in English, but when Vicki came in, I showed her, because here it had two footnotes for two different words. One of the words was what is translated as the summer fruit, and the other word is translated as the end. And mm-hmm. I think maybe it's the relationship that those words are similar, maybe.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. So,
also, a coat is also a thorn, right?
A coat could be a thorn. I mean, kayetz means the time of that you let the produce dry in the field. That's what it is. So, what would normally happen is you would harvest your produce, and it comes in baskets, you know, after you harvest it, and it's tasty and juicy, you know, it's coming out of the field, it's really good. Here, in the basket, are these inferior figs that they're not tasty and juicy. So, what you would typically do then is leave them in the field, let them either ripen or dry out or somehow, but instead they're being brought in right away in the basket. She says, I'm not waiting anymore. They are the inferior figs represent Klal Yisrael, that they're not behaving properly, and I'm bringing them in. They're in the basket. I'm not waiting any longer. I'm not giving them any more chances.
So Kates is end?
Kates is end.
So it is the same word.
Yeah, Kates is.
And Kayetz.
Yeah, it's true, except that we do find the word Kayetz meaning the summertime, which means the time that the fruits generally ripen, the produce ripens.
Maybe that's why he's saying that specifically, like Dina just said.
Same root of the word. Right,
yeah.
Right. That's a good point. That is a good point. Now, this formula we find many times in Tanakh, where the Navi reports to us what he sees, and then the Navi reports to us that he is asked, what do you see? And he responds, this is what I see. Which means, as far as we're concerned, because we're listening to the Navi speak, we hear it twice. We hear what he saw. We hear then either Hashem or the Malach asking him, what do you see? And then he responds with what he sees. Perhaps a very famous example is in Zechariah, because it's the Haftarah for Hanukkah. So you don't have to turn to this. Actually, the truth is, are we going to read it the Shabbos? Because this Shabbos is Balosch, it's the same Haftarah.
Yeah,
so we're going to read it this Shabbos. Okay. So you may as well turn. It's in Zechariah.
I thought you were
going to
say it was
Mikael,
so it's
Kate. Very good. I'm sorry, it's in Perek Dalet, chapter 4 of Zechariah. Now, let's contrast a little bit. It's not exactly the same idea, but you'll see that there's a similar. In Perek Dalet of Zechariah, this is this week's Haftorah, so it starts off by saying that the Malach who was speaking to me, he woke me up like I was a man who woke up from a dream. And then it says, Pasuk Beis, Perek Dalet Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Elai Mo'a Toroeh, what do you see? Vayomer, I said, Ra'isi, and he describes this menorah that he sees. So he could have just told us what he saw. But instead, he starts off by saying that the Malach said to me, what do you see? And I responded to the Malach, this is what I saw. Then later, Pasuk Dalid, in verse 4 it says, Va'an va'omar el ha-malach ha-dover bi-lemor. I called out and I said to the Malach who was speaking to me, saying, Ma'ela Adoni, what are these, my master? Pasuk Hey, Vayana Malach Hadover Bi Vayomer Elai. So the Malach responded to me and said to me, Halo Yadata Mohei Ma'ela, don't you know what they are? Va'omar Lo Adoni. I said, no, I don't know. So it's going back and forth. Again, it seems redundant over here. Now, we're not going to discuss right now what is going on in Zechariah, which of course we'll need some explanation when we get there, Mirz Hashem, what is that back and forth over there. But I'm just showing you that the Navi will sometimes just say what he saw, and sometimes he'll narrate a conversation about what he sees. And sometimes it's both. So here, back in Amos, first he tells us what he sees, then he narrates that Hashem said to him, what do you see, Amos? And Amos responds with the same thing. So now, why would you have an exchange like this? At least, why would it be reported to us? So let's say what it isn't before we say what it is or what it might be. What it isn't is the Ramchal writes very clearly that a Navi always knows what he or she is seeing. Uh-huh. A Navi is never confused by what they see. They may not be able to interpret it, like we find with Zechariah, where he says, I don't understand what the interpretation of it is, but what they see is very clear. In fact, the Ramchal writes that a Navi's perception of what he sees is far more profound and far more clear than what we here see with our eyes and sense with our senses and hear and everything else. That our physical senses are inferior to the heightened perception of a Navi. And a Navi is very clear about what he or she is seeing. So what is not going on over here, or anywhere else where you find an exchange like this, is that the Navi isn't sure what they are seeing, and then they are, so the either Hashem or the Malach is asking, what are you seeing? So that to test the Navi, to make sure the Navi got it right. That is not what is going on. So why then would Hashem, in this case, why would Hashem say to Amos, what do you see, and make Amos articulate what he is seeing? Now, for our purposes, we have to know what he saw. And Amos has two ways of telling us that. He could either just tell us what he saw, or he could narrate the story that Hashem asked me, what do I see? And I told him this is what I saw. Here, he does both. So that's a question. But as far as the conversation goes between Hashem and Amos, why does Hashem need to ask Amos, what do you see, before Hashem tells him what it means? Hashem's about to tell him what it means. So he starts off by saying, what do you see? Amos says what he sees. Hashem says, okay, this is a sign, X, Y, and Z. Why not just tell him, Amos, what I'm showing you is a sign to X, Y, and Z. Now, when he's reporting to us, he first has to tell us, I saw whatever it is, and then Hashem told me this is what it means.
So there's no perception here? I mean, you can see something, and then, like you're saying, that understand what it means. Maybe that's what the question is. Like, how are you interpreting what you're seeing?
It could be, but then he is simply repeating the picture. He's not interpreting.
Because he didn't interpret, that's why Hashem has to tell him this is what it means.
Okay.
I mean, it's like a test, no? You know, like, did you understand what I want you to tell these people? This is what you need to tell them.
Right, so you could say that. It seems to me from the Ramchal that would be a little too... it'll be a little too elementary for a conversation between Hashem and the Navi, because Hashem knows the Navi saw it, and as the Ramchal writes, his perception is perfect. He understands it perfectly. The Ramchal is coming to debunk the notion that a Navi is like wishy-washy about what they've seen. They're not clear. You know, they're kind of like floating through some haze. Mm-hmm. He says, no. Sometimes they may look like that to us, because they lose control of their physical body as they are so involved in Ruchnius, but they're not in any kind of haze. They've got it 100% clear what they're saying.
Hashem knows what the Navi saw. Like, when Hashem said to Adam, what happened, where are you? He knew the answer.
Yeah, so that was to give Adam a chance to write people
Sech
V'Dorim in order to...
It can't be the same with the Navi.
It could be.
Well, he gave him the vision. Anyway.
It could be. Now, you could say that Hashem has that conversation with the Navi just for our benefit, because Hashem wants us to read that Hashem said to him, what did you see? And then he responds to what I saw, and then Hashem tells him, because this is what it means.
Because we would have seen the fruit.
But that's fine, except that here...
We wouldn't have seen that the fruit was us and that we were... But we still
got his report twice.
Yeah.
That's not necessary over here, because he tells us what he sees. And then he says, he asked me what I saw, and then I told him what I saw, which is exactly...
How the Navi experiences is probably very significant for us.
Very?
Significant.
Okay.
For us.
Okay. So it seems that what's trying to be brought out over here is the way that the Navi is experiencing it, and that Hashem is emphasizing to the Navi what is going on. Meaning that we already pointed out that there's a difference between the Navi simply narrating that, you know, Hashem told him a nevuah. There's going to be this, that, or the other thing. There's going to be this punishment or that punishment. Versus, here's a picture to go with the nevuah. That's a stronger nevuah. That means it's happening. It's a more powerful nevuah when it comes along with a visual. Not just the words. And this comes along with a visual. If Hashem says to him, what do you see? Then what is being emphasized over here is that he sees something that's going along with the nevuah. Meaning, first he tells us what he saw. That's important. We have to know what he saw, otherwise we don't know what's going on. But then he tells us, and Hashem said to me, what do you see? Meaning, the visual is critical over here. This is not just another nevuah. This nevuah is going to be attached to this picture, and therefore keep the picture in mind, put that in your head, because this is real, this is powerful mussar. As you know, there's a big difference between a mussar being delivered with a visual versus mussar just being delivered. When there's a visual in front of you, a story or an incident, when there's a visual that goes along with it, it becomes much more powerful. And here, here and every place else, I believe where you see this formula in Navi, that's what's being emphasized, is that we, the ones who the Nevuah is for, because the Nevuah, remember, the Nevuah is Nichtav Aladoros, it's for all generations, so it's speaking to us as just as it was speaking to them, it's speaking to us directly. And that Nevuah is saying, the picture is significant, keep it in your minds. This is an important picture, not just the words, but know this picture. Now, it's a little difficult for us because we're not in an agricultural society, so we don't relate to a kluv kayetz. The audience that Amos was speaking to knew exactly what a kluv kayetz was. It wasn't, it would be like saying, you know, what do you see? I see a red sedan. We would all, that would immediately put a picture in our minds. Right? This kluv kayetz is a picture everybody knew what it was. Yeah.
Were there ever any blind prophets?
That's a good question. A Navi typically, remember we said with Amos, because he has a speech impediment, normally it is not covered for the Shekhinah that someone with a handicap be a Navi, at least not a Navi for all of Klal Yisrael. Anybody could become a Navi, any Jew could become a Navi, that just means they have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that doesn't mean that they're saying a Nevuah for other people. So, I don't know of a blind. There are several of the Talmidei Chacham of the Mishnais and the Gemara that were blind. Hmm. We know of several. But
is Nevuah always visual?
I don't think it always has to be visual, no. It can be words.
So like last week when he said, I saw this, and then I asked Hashem to do this, and I saw this, and Hashem. So we know that he saw it then too, but we didn't have that dialogue.
Right. Hashem didn't say, what did you see? And then he, right, didn't have that over there. He just saw it, realized there was something down before he died.
But Yechezkel also had a lot of vision.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. Sometimes the Navi is told to do something as a visual for the people he's speaking to. That we found in Yechezkel a lot.
Right. Yeah.
Where he took a stick and put it together. All the various things that you see over there. That's also in order to send the message home to us.
So Nebuchadnezzar is not like a dream?
It can be a dream. It can be a dream. But that's what the Ramchal is saying. The dream is not like we dream. The dream that Paro had was a dream that, like we dream, only that he remembered it. The dreams of Yosef, because they were dreams and not Nebuchadnezzar, they're called Chalomos. The Marsha in Maseches Brachos delineates four levels of dreams. The lowest level, of course, being just Narishkeit. That we, most of the time that's what we dream, it's just Narishkeit. But then there's higher and higher levels of dreams, and then above that is Nevuah. Now, Nevuah, when one is sleeping, is not a chalom. Hashem says in this week's parsha, actually, Bachalom Adab Berbo, I will speak to him in a dream. But that's a higher level. That's not a dream. What Yosef saw, his dreams, which were a form of Nevuah, but they were a little bit lower than true Nevuah. He saw a chalom. And Paro certainly were lower than real Nevuah. But the Ramchal is saying that when it's Nevuah, it is with perfect clarity. It's not wishy-washy at all.
And he had now with us with two of his senses, the vision and
right, hearing. Right. We don't know if Nevuah may come with smells. It's possible.
But this one we know is two.
Yeah, he doesn't report it. It's not important to us to know whether it came with a smell or not.
I think there seems to be comparing Klal Yisrael to the figs, because if you let a fig continue to be on the vine, it will get more sweeter.
Usually.
If
it's sometimes you have a bad apple, a bad fig, and it just won't get better, right? But yes, here it was taken off the vine, which means it's not going to get any better.
It's not going to get any better. So right. I think it's just showing the mashal to Klal Yisrael.
Right.
That we're not doing Hashem's will.
Very good. Very good. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nivra. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vehililu Shiros Heichal Bayomahu, and the songs of the Heichal of the palaces will become wailing on that day. Nu Hashem Elokim, says Hashem Elokim, Rav Hapeger, there will be many corpses. In all places they will be removing those corpses. They'll be saying, get rid of those corpses. There'll be so many people who will be killed. Shimuzos hashoafim evyon. Listen to this. Those who pressure, or those who oppress the poor. Vilashbis aniei aretz. And those who take advantage of the poor of the land. Listen to this. Now, how do they take advantage of the poor people? This is a fascinating thing. The next pasuk, verse 5. Lamar, they say, Masa Yavar HaChodesh, when will the month pass? Vinashbira Shever, and we will make money, we'll make a great sale on food. Vashabas, and when will the Shabbos come? Viniftecha bar, and we'll be able to open up the storehouses of food, which means we'll make money selling food. What does this mean? Yavar HaChodesh is a reference to an Iber Yar, to having a leap year. And those who wanted to oppress the poor would say, we can't wait for a leap year. A leap year is a great opportunity to take advantage of the poor. Why? Because as you know, we have a mitzvah of Chadash, and that you can't eat from the new grain of that year until you get to the second day of Pesach. So the crops that were grown in Eretz Yisrael this past year could not be eaten until after the second day of Pesach. When it's a leap year, then you extend the time that you can't eat from the new grain, and food becomes more scarce. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, when discussing the various factors that were taken into account whether to make a particular year into a leap year or not. See, we have a set calendar, so for us it's very regimented. The leap years come every third or second year, and it's very regimented. And in a 19-year cycle, the leap years are the 3rd, 6th, 8th, 11th, 14th, 17th, and 19th years. Those are the leap years. This year was a leap year, because this is a third year of the 19-year cycle, so it was a leap year. Until this coming Rosh Hashanah will be the fourth year of a 19-year cycle. It'll be 3 years till the next leap year. So for us, it's a very rigid system. But it wasn't in the time that they were Mekadosh al Piri'iya, that there were still witnesses coming. And then the Sanhedrin would sit and debate whether there should or should not be a leap year that coming year. So one of the factors, of course, is to make sure that Pesach and Sukkot come out at the right times. But there are other factors as well. And there are factors both for and against whether to have a leap year. One of the factors against a leap year is that it puts pressure on the food supply in Eretz Yisrael, because you can't eat from the new grain until the second day of Pesach. So if you put a leap year in, a leap month, then you end up pushing off the Karban HaOmer an extra month. Now, there's another offsetting factor may be that there isn't ripe grain that you can offer for the Karban HaOmer, because you need ripe barley for the Karban HaOmer. If you don't have ripe barley, you can't offer the Karban HaOmer. So you might have a leap year specifically because you don't have new grain yet. But if you do have new grain and you make a leap year, then it puts pressure on particularly the poor people. The poor people are always the ones who are going to suffer first. So that's what it means here, that those who wanted to repress the poor were saying, when will there be a leap year that will be able to take advantage of the poor, because there'll be an extra month where they won't have the new crop and will be able to raise the prices on food? What does it mean, Shabbos? Shabbos is not referring to the seventh day of the week. It is referring to Shemitah. Same issue. Because when a Shemitah year comes, as we know, food can be scarce. And therefore, those who have food stored up from the sixth year, as Hashem promises that there'll be a bumper crop in the sixth year to take care of the lack of crops in the seventh year, and actually part of the eighth year as well. So those who wanted to oppress the poor, if they would have storehouses of food from the sixth year, they would then sell it in the seventh year at an exorbitant price. So they would gouge the poor in order to make money. And Hashem says, listen, all you who are doing this, who are oppressing the poor, and this is how they do it. And they say...
But they're just trying to make money. There's an opportunity for them to... Because they have another month that they're selling. So why is it specifically for the poor?
Because the poor are the ones who needed it. The rich were able to save up themselves. And they had their own storehouses. They weren't dependent on these people. The Gemara has very, very negative things to say about a person who is mafkia sha'arim, who raises the rates, who creates inflation, who raises the rates if you have a going rate, and then someone raises the rates, mafkia sha'arim. The Gemara has very, very negative things to say, particularly with food. That's particularly the issue.
Because it goes against Hashem, or is it stuck or mishpat? Stuck or mishpat?
Yeah.
It goes against
yeah.
Hashem wants.
Right.
Also in Tehillim, all the time, Hashem calls people for being not nice to the poor.
Yeah. Lahaktin eifa, to diminish the size of the eifa, which means to sell this for the same price a smaller measurement of food, ulahagdil shekel, and to increase the amount of money that they're getting for this lower measurement, the lower volume, getting more money, ulaaves mosne mirma, and make the scales to falsify the scales with falsehood. La'aves and mirma are both different words for falsifying. Liknos ba'kesef dalim, to buy with money the poor, which is a reference to once the poor people can't afford the food anymore, what are they going to do? They're going to have to sell themselves. Ve'evyon ba'avur na'alayim, and in the impoverished, because of na'alayim. Now we had this language in the beginning of Amos. There's two explanations. Either means for shoes, or it means we talked about this, that to be no'el can also mean if a person has various fields and they want their fields to be contiguous, because it makes it easier to plow your fields if they're connected. So if there was a poor person who had a small plot of land that was between two larger plots of land owned by the same wealthy person, so they would pressure that poor person to sell their small plot to the wealthy person, that now he has all his fields to be contiguous. Umapal bar nashbir, and from what falls from the food, we will make money. Rashi says that the food would be so scarce, we'll even be able to sell that which falls out of the nafa, out of the sieve, that you know you're sifting, and some of the stuff falls out over the side onto the floor. That which you would normally just sweep away, even that we'll be able to collect and sell for exorbitant prices. So you see why Hashem is not willing to overlook any of this. Nishba Hashem bigaon Yaakov, Hashem swears in the glory of Yaakov, im eshkach lanetzach kol ma'asem, if I will forget forever all of their actions, Hashem says I'm going to punish. Ha'al zos lo sirgaz ha'aretz, for this should not the land become destroyed, or the land should be destroyed, or it should destroy. The achal kol yoshev, the aval kol yoshev ba, and all those who dwell in it should become avelim, should become mourners. The olsa chaor kula, and the way Rashi explains this is that the it will rise up like light, which means the light will be removed. Light will be removed completely from the land. The land will become dark. Vinigrisha vinishkia kiar mitzrayim, and it will chase away and settle down like the river of Mitzrayim. Of course, the river of Mitzrayim refers to the Nile. Rashi says that every 40 years the Nile overflows its banks, and in so doing it makes the land around the Nile fertile. But the way that happens, Rashi says, the phenomena is that because there's a long time between, I don't know if it's literally 40 years, but there's a long time between the various risings of the Nile. So there's a lot of stuff that settles into the river during those years that the Nile does not overflow its banks. And then when it does, so as it overflows its banks, so a lot of the residue and stuff that has settled into the Nile goes out onto the banks. And then when the water recedes back into the Nile, it recedes without all that residue. So the water becomes more clear. So it's a way not only of irrigating the land, but it also is a way that the Nile cleanses itself in that process. The natural process of it overflowing its banks cleanses the Nile. So the analogy here is that the land of Eretz Yisrael is going to cleanse itself in throwing out all of the residue, which is all of the Rishayim, all the people who are doing Averos, and then to come back in a clear manner. V'yoyah bayom ahunu Hashem Elokim, will be on that day says Hashem. Now here you have a famous statement. Vehivesi Hashem Eshbat Saharayim. I will bring the sun in the middle of the day. I will have the sun set in the middle of the day. Vachashachti la'aretz biyom or. I will darken the land on the day of light. I will make the sun set in the middle of the day. The sun will set when it really should be up. So the Gemara tells us is particularly a reference to Yoshiyahu HaMelech, who we learned about in Malachim. Yoshiyahu HaMelech was a great tzaddik, and Yoshiyahu HaMelech was killed because he did not want to allow Paro Necho. He didn't want to allow Paro to go through his land. Paro Necho took an army to fight with Bavel, with the Kastim, and with the Kastim, if I remember correctly. Anyway, so he said to Yoshiyahu that he will take he wants to take his army through in peace. He has no intention of attacking Yoshiyahu, but Yoshiyahu knew the pasuk that there will be shalom in the land, and Hashem will not, v'cherev lo yavor ba'artzechem, even a cherev shall shalom, Hashem will not allow the sword to go through your land. So Yoshiyahu, knowing that people were tzaddikim, therefore he relied on the pasuk that he would be able to stop Paro Necho, even though Yoshiyahu's army was far weaker than Mitzrayim, but the pasuk says that Hashem won't allow the army to go through your land. And Yoshiyahu was tricked by the Leitzani Hadar, by those who did worship Avodah Zarah in secret, and he did not know it. And therefore, when he tried to stop, the Navi told him he should not go, and he went anyway to try to stop Paro Necho. Yirmiyahu told him he shouldn't go, and Paro Necho attacked him and killed Yoshiyahu. That's they shot sword after sword into him, arrow after arrow into him, and he was killed. We say this as one of the kinos on Tisha B'Av. We've said this before, and that's the famous pasuk that Yoshiyahu says, "Tzadiku Hashem ki fihu marisi." Hashem is the tzadik because I went against his word. So Yoshiyahu is remembered as the great tzadik. But that is an example of "Veisi Hashem Eshbat Saharayim." The sun set during the day, because during the day means when it's sudden. Everything seems to be fine. There's nothing wrong. There's no problems. The Jews weren't being attacked by a foreign enemy. It wasn't like when Nebuchadnezzar came and conquered the land. This seems to have been an innocuous thing. And all of a sudden, we lost our great tzaddik, we lost our great leader, we lost Yoshio. That's an example of Vevesi Hashem Eshbat Saharayim. It is usually used when someone, God forbid, dies young, then this statement is invoked. So the Gemara says, it's talking about Yoshiyahu. The Gemara says when Rav Yochanan passed away, this pasuk was used. They used this pasuk in his hesped for Rav Yochanan, the famous Rav Yochanan of the Gemara, that they used this pasuk at his hesped. What is important to note over here is that the pasuk referring to Yoshiyahu is not of the 10 tribes. It's not the northern kingdom. Yoshiyahu is of Yehuda, of the southern kingdom. And yet, even that calamity is being mentioned here, despite the fact that, of course, the main nevuah of Amos is referring to the northern kingdom. Still, as we've seen several times in Treyasar, even though the thrust of the nevuahs are towards the northern kingdom, still there are some references to what would happen to Malchus Yehuda as well. Pasuk Yud, V'hafachti chageichem le'evel, I will turn your holidays into mourning, v'chol shirechem l'kinon, all your singing into lamentations, v'haleisi al kol masnayim sok, and I will bring up on all midsections sackcloth, v'al kol rosh karcha, and on all heads baldness, because they used to pull out some hair in mourning. V'samtia ke'evel yachida, will make her, meaning the Jewish people, like mourning over a singular mourning, which means mourning over an only child. V'acharisa ki'omar, and afterwards like the day of bitterness. Many halachos of avelos, of mourning, are learned from this pasuk. There are many that are learned from this pasuk. For example, how many days does one sit Shiva Chas V'Shalom? It's 7 days. That is derived from the fact that it says, V'Hafachti Chageichem La'Evel, your holiday, your Chag, I'll turn to an Evel, and we know that Pesach and Sukkot are each 7 days. It's true, Sukkot is an 8th day, but that's a separate Yom Tov. Shemini Atzeres is a separate Yom Tov, but Pesach and Sukkot are 7 days, and therefore that Avelos is 7 days is derived from here. In addition to that, there is a halacha that is often not well known. An avel is aser ba'asiyas malacha. A person who is in avelos is not allowed to do work. They're not allowed to work, meaning for their parnasa. They can't do their job, a person who is in avelos. So that is also derived from here, because just as Yom Tov, one cannot do malacha, one can't do work, so too when one is in avelos, they cannot do work. This has to be dealt with. If a person is sitting Shiva, who there they have a business that is still functioning as they're sitting Shiva, that has to be dealt with, because really their business cannot, they're not allowed to have work done while they are in Shiva. But the most significant part of the pasuk that is quoted for Hilchos Avelos is the very end of the pasuk, Vacharisa ki yom mar, that the afterwards is like a day of bitterness. The Gemara derives from here aninus. Aninus is the state where a person's relative has passed away, and they have not yet been buried. So there is the state of aninus, and we know that at that time a person is patur from all mitzvos, and it's a strange state of being where brachos are not recited and davening is not done and things like that. So there is a discussion when typically, particularly in our day and age, the funerals take place often not on the same day that the person passes away. Very often it's the next day, especially if it's in Eretz Yisrael, but even if it's in America, very often it will be, it gets pushed off by 1 day or whatever it is, just to get things together. So, but if the kavura, if the burial takes place on the same day as the petira, so the Gemara says that the aninus, I want to confuse everybody, this is not the same aninus as being patur from all mitzvos, but there is a status called aninus which lasts for 1 day. And so, for example, a man who is an avel does not wear tefillin that first day. That is because of this, well, it's partially because of this pasuk, aninus, that it says, v'charisa ki yom mar, that day is like a day of bitterness. That first day, particularly, is the day of bitterness. And again, many halachos are derived from that characterization of that day being a day of bitterness. And here, Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, we have a very famous Pasuk, which we're going to read and come back to after we finish the Perek. Hine yamim bayim nuum Hashem Elokim, behold, days are coming, says Hashem, v'yishlachti rav ba'aretz, I will send a famine in the land. Lo rav la'lechem v'lo tzama la'mayim, and not a famine for bread, and not a thirst for water, kim lishmoa is tivrei Hashem, but rather it will be a famine to hear the word of Hashem. So even though we've been talking about calamity and about situations where there might be a lack of food, physical food, but here the pasuk says, Hashem says that the worst calamity is going to be that there's going to be a famine to hear the word of Hashem, which we'll get back to. And as a result of that, Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12, and no miyam ad yam, they will move from sea to sea, umit safon van mizrach, and from north to east. People are going to wander around. Yeshotetu, they will wander. Levakesh es tvar Hashem, to seek the word of Hashem. For lo yimtso, they will not find it. People will wander looking for the word of Hashem and not being able to find it. On that day, the beautiful young women and the bachurim, the young men, they will, tisalafta means they'll become faint because of tzama, because of thirst. Hanishboim be'ashmas Shomron, those who swear by the sins of Shomron, va'amru, and they say Chei Elohecha Don v'Chei Derech Be'er Shaba, they swear, they say, by the life of your God Don, because one of the agolim, one of the calves that was set up by Yerov ben Avot was in Don, and by the life of the way to Be'er Sheva, because that's where the other Egel was, v'naflu, and they will fall, v'lo yakumu od, they will not get up anymore. So the Navi tells us that Hashem says there will be a famine to hear the word of Hashem. At its very simple meaning, this means that there will not be nevuah, that there won't be prophecy, because that's the word of Hashem. That they lived in the age of prophecy. No Jew in the time of Amos could contemplate a world without nevuah. The collective memory of the Jewish people was always with nevuah, always. Certainly in the time of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, there was nevuah, and the Shvatim had nevuah. And even in Mitzrayim, although it was few and far between, but Hashem communicated with Aaron in Mitzrayim, there was nevuah. Miriam had nevuah, there was nevuah. And certainly once we got out of Mitzrayim, the Gemara tells us there were over a million Nevi'im during the age of nevuah. And even though we learned in Malachim that with the departure of Eliyahu HaNavi from this world, that Nevuah became diminished, there were now fewer Nevi'im, there used to be a lot more, but with Eliyahu's leaving, he took with him a lot of the Nevuah, but there still was, Nevuah was still a common thing. And Hashem here tells almost to tell us there will come a time where there will not be nevuah. And people will wander seeking the word of Hashem and they will not find it. And they'll wander the different directions and they will not be able to find the word of Hashem. They will not be able to find nevuah. That is the simple meaning of the pasuk. We, of course, are living that now. We've been living it for a long time now. Unfortunately, it's been a long time. The age of Nevuah ended with the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, meaning there were still Nevi'im when the second Beis HaMikdash was built, but as they died out, they were not replaced. The Anshei Knesset HaGedola, which was the body that led us in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, had many Nevi'im in it, mehem kama Nevi'im. There were many Nevi'im among the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, but as they died, they were not replaced. And Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi are the last of the Nevi'im, which are at the end of Treyasar, and then they were not replaced. So we have not had Nevuah now in well over 2,000 years. It's more like 2,400, 2,300 years that we have not had Nevuah. And we are living this ra'av, we're living this famine, lishmoas devrei Hashem, to hear the word of Hashem. That is the simple meaning. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbos says that this pasuk sounds like asida Torah lishtakech mi Yisrael, that the Jews will eventually forget the Torah, because it says that they're not going to know the word of Hashem. The word of Hashem could mean nevuah, but could also mean the Torah itself. And therefore the Gemara makes a pronouncement that in the future the Jews will forget the Torah. Chas v'shalom. And the Gemara throws that around a little bit, discusses this issue of, is it true that the Jews will eventually forget the Torah? And the conclusion of the Gemara is no, chas v'shalom, that the Jews will not forget the Torah. However, that there will not be halacha brura u'mishna brura v'makom echa, there will not be a clear halacha in one place. That it will be confusing. It's not that the Torah will be forgotten, but to know the bottom line, what do we do? What is the conclusion of the discussion? Will be confusing. It will be a situation of a lot of opinions and without clarity of a bottom line. This we know we are living far more than anybody who came before us, but we don't know if we've hit bottom, or if it will get worse, chas v'shalom. It could get worse, in theory. It's true, we have very little clarity, and it's true, we have a lot of opinions, and very little, there's a lot of a lot of confusion, but there theoretically could be even more confusion. We don't know what the end game is, but the Gemara says that is also part of this nevuah, that there will be a Rav, there will be a family, Shmoas Divrei Hashem, to hear the word of Hashem. It's not only referring to Nevuah, but it is also referring to clarity in Torah, clarity in the Halacha. And, a person can memorize Shas, but still not have a clarity in Halacha. Because that takes an extra level, an extra Shmaitza Aliba de Hilchasa. To be able to arrive at a conclusion is the most difficult aspect of learning, and it does not come easily, and there can be a lot of scholarship, which Baruch Hashem we have today, a lot of scholarship, but nevertheless we can still have a lot of confusion. And plus, in addition to the fact that individuals could have a lot of scholarship but also a lot of confusion, we also don't have clear leadership. Without clear leadership, knowing that this person is the one who sets policy for all of Klal Yisrael, then you're going to end up with all kinds of opinions and all kinds of mahalchim, all kinds of ways of doing things, and you can end up with more confusion. So we are living that today without question, but we don't know if we've hit rock bottom. No nevuah, we are at rock bottom. I mean, we've been at rock bottom for over 2,000 years. No nevuah. Now, I mentioned to you before several times that the Medrash tells us, the Medrash mentions this in several places. One of the places is in the beginning of Megillas Rus, that there are 10 famines since the beginning of the world until Mashiach comes. And this follows the same pattern as the 10 Shiros, the 10 songs, also from the beginning of the world until Mashiach comes. It doesn't mean there's only 10 famines, but it means there are 10 significant famines that impact the history of the world. For example, the famine in the day of Avram Avinu, the famine in the day of Yitzchak, the famine in the day of Yaakov. These are all significant famines. We talked about it in Malachim with the famine in Shomron. We talked about it with Elisha. We discussed that famine. That's one of the 10 famines. The 10th famine is the final famine, which is this one that is mentioned here in Amos. The final one is lo ra'av la'lechem v'lo tzama la'mayim, not a famine for food, not a thirst for water, but rather it is a famine in hearing the word of Hashem. I will tell you that as of 150 years ago, the vast majority of Jews, which were living in Eastern Europe, did not understand this pasuk, meaning they understood the part about not having the word of Hashem. What they would not have understood is the statement "Lo ra'av la'lechem v'lo tzama la'mayim," not a famine for bread and not a thirst for water. They would have said, "What are you talking about? Yes. We don't have any food on the table. We're starving. There are children who go to bed hungry. What does it mean, lo ra'av la'lechem v'lo tzama la'mayim?" That's not. We understand that we're in the age of not having divrei Hashem, that we don't have nevuah. They would have related to that just as we do. They would have related. We would relate to it more than they do, but they would have related to that. But they would have questioned, what does it mean not to have that this? It's not going to be a famine for bread. It seems like it's, in addition to a famine for bread, there's also a famine for the divrei Hashem. Little did they know the incredible Venahafahu, how Klal Yisrael has gone from predominantly living in poverty to living in relative affluence. And I will say that even though there are large segments of Jews, particularly in Israel, of God-fearing Jews living in poverty, it's not the same thing as Eastern Europe. It's not the same thing as Eastern Europe. In Eastern Europe, I mean, I don't want to downgrade what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. There are a lot of people who need money, and they are in desperate straits. But it still cannot be compared to what went on in Eastern Europe, where people literally starved to death. They didn't have. They literally. I mean, it was gefährlich in Eastern Europe. They didn't. They really, really didn't have. But little did they know that their own descendants, those who would survive, and end up in the Treifa Medina, end up where we are, would be living in relative affluence. And we read this pasuk, we understand it perfectly. It's not a famine for bread. Even the most impoverished among us, it's rare that people don't put bread on the table. It's very rare in our society. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm not saying there aren't people who need it. But as a general rule, it's a rare thing. So most people, bread is on the table. There's certainly water to drink. That's not the issue. The issue is, lishmo es divrei Hashem, to hear the word of Hashem. And therefore, we are living this pasuk more accurately than those who came before us. Even though it's been a long time that it hasn't been divrei Hashem, but we are living this incredible, it's almost ironic, this where the two things don't seem to match up, where there's so much abundance physically and so much of a lack spiritually.
Correct.
We know that when Mashiach comes, b'mehirah v'yameinu, there will be nevuah. Mashiach will be a Navi. Not only he will be a Navi, he will be the second greatest Navi to ever live after Moshe Rabbeinu. He cannot be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, we know that. That's one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. He can't be like Moshe Rabbeinu, but he will be second to Moshe Rabbeinu in Nevuah. We also know that Eliyahu HaNavi will precede him. Eliyahu HaNavi himself being one of the greatest Navim we've ever had, but he will be a greater Navi than Eliyahu HaNavi. So there will be Nevuah. When the floodgates of Nevuah open, other people will get Nevuah as well, because the age of Nevuah will return. And there will be Dvar Hashem, there will be the age of Nevuah will return to those who are worthy of it. In addition, clarity in Torah and in Halacha will return. We will have that clarity in Halacha. There will be besides the Melech HaMashiach, wearing the crown of Malchus, there will also be Kisra Shel Kohuna, the crown of Kohuna will return with the Kohen Gadol, and there will also be the Keser Shel Torah, the crown of Torah will also return. That will happen. But we are living right now in that incredible ra'av, that incredible famine. Hashem is saying that this is what is going to happen. Now, it is somewhat difficult to understand the nature of this ra'av, because everything else we've read about, as Hashem reacts to the way the Jews are behaving, is a punishment. So a punishment in Hashem taking away physical needs and pleasures and comforts, we understand that. We don't like it, but we understand it. Here, Hashem seems to be taking away precisely that which is needed for us to come back to Him. If we are to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and He says, I'm going to take away the Dvar Hashem, well, that makes it much more difficult to come back to Him. You can say to the child that because you used your new toy to bop your sister on the head, I'm going to take away your new toy. You'll learn how to use your toy properly. That may make sense. But if you say to the child that I'm going to take away from you any ability to learn how to behave properly, well, that doesn't help the child. What does that do for the child?
Yeah.
The whole point is the child should learn how to behave properly. So taking away the word of Hashem, and Hashem is predicting this, it seems to be counterproductive. What would be the purpose in this? And Hashem is telling them this is going to happen. That this is going to happen in the future.
But didn't you explain that what it means is that we don't have clarity as to exactly what we have to do? But if we have an idea, if we think, you know, we have a derech, I mean, this is how we live our lives. We have a derech, and we think, okay, this is our rub, this is our psak, and this is what we're supposed to do. So then that isn't that doing Ritzon Hashem?
Yes.
So then we can do it.
We can do Ritzon Hashem. The question is, can we improve? Can we get to a point where Nevuah, where we'll get everything back? Of course, obviously we can. But how does this bring us closer to...
Because we're still doing what we think is Ritzon Hashem. And so we're improving our connection. And if just think, if everyone would be doing this, if all the Jews would be doing it, you can be sure Mashiach would come.
That's for sure true.
So then it's, you know, if Hashem didn't give us the tools, can't expect differently.
Right. Right. Okay. So He doesn't expect us to be able to do what we would be able to do if we had Nevi'im. Obviously, he took away the divorce, so we can't be expected to do more than is possible. That's for sure true. Klal Yisrael had Nevi'im. And they still lost the Beis HaMikdash. It's not a guarantee. Just because you have someone in your community who is telling you directly, you, I mean everybody, directly, behave. Because if you don't, this is what's going to happen. And if you do, this is what's going to happen. And he's telling us, and he's getting direct communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, people can still ignore him.
And here he is saying it.
Right? So Hashem is saying, I'm going to take away this. It's a wonderful tool, Nevuah. But at the end of the day, it's only a tool. And if you're not going to take advantage of it, I'm going to take it away. And then, Klal Yisrael's desire for it may actually bring us back. Because the lack of clarity, that confusion that we experience, may actually be more effective than the clarity. Knowing this is what you should do, this is what you should not do, didn't seem to work. I mean, when I say it didn't seem to work, understand, it worked for a lot of people, for a lot of years. It did work, but overall, the system didn't work. It overall did not prevent the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash over many years. So, the Hashem says, I'm going to remove it, and then Klal Yisrael's deep desire to get it back, that would motivate us to do the right thing and to bring Mashiach. Now, the right thing is, as you said, not as clear. We can't have the clarity they had then. So the right thing means, as Mrs. Leitch said, to do what that which we can do, which is to follow our Rabbanim and do whatever it is that we're able to do. But there still is a lack of clarity. And that lack of clarity manifests itself. A lot of times, people don't know what to do. A Rav doesn't know what to do. A lot of times, we just have to go with Emunah and do whatever we do, and things are difficult. And a lot of times, what a Navi provided a lot of the times was explanations for why. A lot of times, a Navi was able to explain, this is why this happened. This was a punishment. This was a test. This was a challenge. The Navi could explain that to us. But today, we have no idea. And we're just like you know, stumbling around trying to figure things out. And we don't know. We don't know. Did Hashem do this because He wants me to get this message or that message or this message? I don't know. We don't know. And so it is a difficult existence. But that very difficulty may drive us to desire the Dvar Hashem so much that we end up bringing Mashiach.
So you're equating the application of knowing what to do with Nevuah?
For sure. For sure. The Ramban, who was not a Navi, but he was obviously a great Talmid Chacham, far greater than anybody we've ever come in contact with, was able to tell you where you, or I, where you are hinted to in the Torah. He was able to tell his Talmidim, this is the pasuk, or this is the word, or this is the letter that hints to your existence.
But that wasn't Nevuah then.
That wasn't Nevuah.
Right, so...
That was Ruach HaKadosh.
At what point would you consider this time... So you're saying that this means we don't have Nevuah.
So I'm saying, so if you lived, if you were a Talmud of the Ramban, you had more clarity than we have today. You still didn't have all the clarity. He wasn't able to tell you every single thing, what it meant, like the Navi could. But imagine knowing which pasuk represented you in the Torah. Like, you would wrap your mind around that pasuk. You would like, that would be your... Imagine, forget, even if you didn't understand what it meant, but just imagine the sense of being, the sense of worth that you would have, knowing this is me. Hashem put me in the Torah. Imagine what... But me, little me, in the Torah. Imagine that sense of worth. No one would walk around thinking, I'm not important. I'm in the Torah. Right? Amazing thing. Right? So with that's the Ramban, but that's still not Nevuah. Today, we don't even have that.
Wasn't it that we lost Nevuah because, now, I don't want to start the whole thing, but because of the Yetzirah for...
Yes.
Yeah. So this Pasuk, which is talking, we're talking about losing Nevuah, like, how do you resolve that?
Okay, that's a very good question. Perhaps we'll lead off with that next time. That's a good question. I'm just asking, we've talked about this before, that the Nevuah really was taken away because they took away the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. So, is this predicting that? That's a good point. Now, it's you can always have various reasons for the same thing. You know, the nevuah was going to be removed one way or another. It could be that's just how it happened. But it's still a good point. And perhaps I'll research that a little
or
bit.
Maybe the other way. Maybe it was because we were going to lose nevuah, then we
could
have
be.
not have make things that we have a bechira. We can't have really three choices. This is totally gone. Then how do you have three choices? Because it's not even.
Right.
Therefore,
could be.
We had to move that, and so maybe this happened first.
It could be. Could be.
For the voters or to be gone on. Later on,
it was on Shekinah Zagadol.
Yeah.
Beginning
yeah,
of the second.
This
is a prediction for the future.
Not this future, but maybe this future.
Yeah. Okay. It's exactly when it would be.
Yeah.
It just seemed like it's so far ahead. Why would he now? Does he still even have?
That's a good point. Is why mention it now when it hasn't happened yet?
And how?
Yeah. He's just saying this is the end game. I mean, you should know this is where you're going.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's a prediction for really in the future, because it's the last Rav. The last Rav.
And the Gemara and the days, that was also, then we had clarity about for Halacha.
Yeah,
right?
But it was post-Nevuah, but we still had clarity in Halacha. The Gemara is talking about that later there would not be clarity in Halacha.
Well, but what about all the different opinions and stuff? I mean,
but in the time of the Gemara, you still... In the Gemara, you still had... those who wore the Keser Shel Torah. Those, the final part of the Gemara, Ravina and Ravashi, they're the last one in the Rambam's list. So you still had those who were the official stewards of Torah.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.